Now, back to WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
WFO, everybody. What's going on? Joe Costello here with you, NHRA Nitro podcast. Andrew Hines, up next. You're going to hear from the Pro Stock Motorcycle Champ. And before you guys who are like not fans of motorcycles say, well, I don't want to hear the Pro Stock Motorcycle Champ, you got to hear this one because it's a human story. He had this thing all but locked up. All he had to do was win first round, and then it all went sideways, and he had to suffer and had to deal with just the agony of defeat moment. Extending over the course of an afternoon, and what is that like? You're going to love what Andrew has to say, and we're going to delve into several different aspects of the season and pro stock motorcycle racing in general and what the future holds. So I think you'll be interested, even if you're a fan of Stock Eliminator or Pro Stock or Top Fuel, and not as much necessarily pro stock motorcycle. If you are a fan of pro stock motorcycle, you are definitely going to love this, because Andrew is going to delve into a lot of different stuff, including some of the technical aspects of the 2020 rules package. So you're going to want to stick around for that. Andrew, coming up later on in the archive, you are going to hear from Megan Meyer. Megan Meyer is also going to be on the show. As for the next several weeks, we are going to be speaking with the champions as we make the holidays and the turn of the new year. And speaking of the holidays, you know, we've got great sponsors and they all have something that might be able to help you in your quest for great holiday gifts, like Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School and the Dragster Adventure. Courses start at $399, and it's a great experience that you would send someone on, someone you really love, care about. They love cars. They like going fast. They're interested, but they don't have a dragster. They don't have a friend with a dragster. They basically spend the day driving dragsters. They make a half-track pass and two full-track passes. They don't bring anything. Frank Hawley sets it all up, and it travels all around the country. So there's got to be somewhere relatively close to where your friend happens to reside that the Dragster Adventure is going at frankhawley.com. Check them out. It's a great gift. Also, rodaxcoffeeandgrills.com, the hot sauces and the spice rubs. Everything good, but it's the coffee, roasted fresh per your order. I like to send out a pound of coffee, bottle of hot sauce, and a container of spice rub. When it arrives, everybody knows how great it is. They tear right into it, and they love it. And I've gotten such positive feedback over the past couple of years. Give Marvin a call, 817-924-6821. Say, hey, Marvin. Calling about those holiday packs and see what he can put out there for you. But it is just amazing. We've got our own WFO Radio themed blend. That's what I like to send out so everybody knows and understands. It's from us, and they enjoy the coffee. They really, really love it. That's rodaxcoffeeandgrills.com. Samtech.edu. This is more self-focused. The School of Automotive Machinists and Technology. You know that our country needs doers and builders and makers, and that means machinists, whether it be in the automotive arena or otherwise, whether it means programming a CNC machine or otherwise, and they can set you up and put you on the path to be in that arena, whether working for SpaceX or Boeing or NASA or an engine shop. You will have a skill. You will have a career that cannot be taken away and will more than likely never be outsourced because we need it right here. Samtech.edu, plus they can place you in those careers. They've got a lot of great connections. It has been one of the great things about this past year. Plus, we got our Factory Stock podcast that we do for them. Check it out. MagicDryUS.com, the official organic absorbent of the NHRA, made of coconut. Doing a great job within the NHRA. Scott Palmer and the team stepping up to support WFO Radio. And finally, Total Seal Piston Rings, the leader in ring seal technology. Here's the deal. New Total Seal podcast. It's called Hidden Horsepower by Total Seal. Guest number one, Jason Lyne. Not talking about his race win or driving the car. Talking about what it takes to be successful building engines in stock eliminator or in pro stock or naturally aspirated applications. Episode two, Pat Musi. Pat Musi talking about giant 900 plus cubic inch nitrous oxide engines or a nitrous oxide assisted engine in a small block Chevrolet, say. You're really going to enjoy it. I definitely would love you to check it out. Hopefully write a review. Subscribe to it. Hidden Horsepower by Total Seal, the new Total Seal podcast. Really, it's part of making sure everybody understands that Total Seal fits the rings for pistons in all forms of racing and over-the-road cars as well. TotalSeal.com. Drag Racing Edge Magazine, EV3 Drag Racing, also on board. Great friends, CompetitionPlus.com. Bobby Bennett, always been very helpful, and it has been great. Our 10th year is in the books. We've knocked it out, the 10th anniversary in the rearview mirror. We're going on to the second decade of WFO. All right, time to get into it. Joining us now, he is the 2019 Mellow Yellow Pro Stock Motorcycle World Champion for the sixth time in his career. Andrew Hines joins us now. Andrew, congratulations.
Thanks, Joe. It's always good to talk to you this time of the year, right?
Yes, this is it. You're the champ. Listen, all year long, you dominated. This was the most... Steve Torrence was probably the most lopsided of all the categories going into the countdown. This was a very lopsided year. You dominated. Races went your way. We had chronicled every one of your wins on WFO. Our listeners can go back into the archive and get your emotions and round by round of every one of those races, right? It could have even been even more dominating, right? We talked about that little short out you had in Vegas, et cetera. But in the countdown, you just never know. And you got a full-on taste of that experience at the Auto Club Finals.
Yeah, I got it not just there, but kind of all the way through the countdown. Just couldn't quite hit that home run that we really wanted to. But, man, that final round of Pomona, the final day, that was just a I said it in my championship speech in front of everybody when we were all dressed up in our monkey suits and all that stuff. But I said, this is probably going to set the new standard for what can happen in racing. You know, what can go wrong? What's the new crazy thing that can happen? And I think Sunday World Finals 2019 kind of set the stage for that one.
We spoke with Gianna last week. That interview is in the archive. I was so thrilled with the way she handled it, right? Like, accepted that the racing gods delivered her a great day. And, you know, in many ways, she never said something like, oh, I didn't deserve it, because she deserved it. She went down the racetrack. That's the sport. You get to the finish line first four times, you're the winner, regardless of what's happening in the other lane. We all know someone that had four red lights against them over the course of the day. Maybe we were the recipients of it, and that win counts just as much. We see it in other sports as well. But just who knows? That's what drag racing is all about, right? You got to show up to the starting line. This past week, I went bracket racing, and my dad says, you know, you probably really don't have a chance to win here this week. I was like, no, that's not true. I got an example of you got to go down the racetrack. You never know what's going to happen. Now, he was right. I did not win, but what a day.
Yeah, I saw you got Wall up there second round.
Yeah. I was in a tough, thank you for noticing, I was in a tough spot because I never got to really push the tree, right? My first run was in eliminations. I wanted to turn it green. I came up 60. And so second round, I was like, well, what do I do? Do I push the tree? I really don't want to go red here. I want to give myself a fighting shot, especially after being the recipient of a red light first round. So I just went right back, hit it same way, came up 60.
And
the kid's a track champ, and he just he thumped me. But that was my best strategy I felt at that moment in that circumstance.
Well, hey, when you lose to the track champ at the final race of the season or whatever it is, it's not too bad. So that's pretty good.
Well, exactly. I'm feeling like if I have a couple of weekends in a row, I could shake off all the rust and be there competing. But we're not talking about me. We're talking about you. For me, Andrew, I like to talk about negative experiences as a way of leading to the positive experience, right? Like you suffered in that final race. Like, that had to be as sickening an experience as any one person can feel in competition, right? It's something that is generally fun, but that you were flirting with the ultimate agony of defeat moment.
Yeah, that was absolutely agonizing. I mean, from the time first round, when I saw the yellow stay on, when I ultimately backed out of the beams first round, I mean, it was just absolutely agony. Like you said, I popped the clutch after I saw the yellows come on, and I probably a bad thing to do as a racer, but I actually closed my eyes, looked down at my gas tank while the bike's still accelerating, and I just pushed the button all the way up to fifth gear and said, I need to look where I'm going. But that was just how defeated I felt at the time. It's like, I just wanted to bury my head in the gas tank and just crawl away from everybody, and shut off early and took my time rolling to the turnoff, thinking like, maybe if I take a long time, the race will be over, everybody will be gone, and this day will be over. That's how long I wanted that roll to the turnoff to be. It just very disappointed in myself and what I did, and just took myself out of what I had done all season long with my racing aspect, and just I totally flushed it and just did not make the right racing call for Sunday for myself mentally. And I paid the price for it. You know, I was sick nearly all day long, and then as the rounds went on and people started dropping like flies, it was just I didn't want to get overly excited any one of those rounds thinking like, hey, what's going to happen here at the end of the day. I was prepared for a total letdown, but my team was there supporting me and making sure that I wasn't going to go find a cliff to jump off of. But we just stuck around and hung out and talked about good times and hung out with family and kind of let the racing play out as it could. And ultimately at the end of the day, we're all standing there with our jaws on the ground.
Well, exactly. And I like to take positive personal experience out of my adventure in the NHRA, right? Which I can share some of them and others not. But I remember watching Mike Mullaney on the starting line, and I forget it was maybe when Matt Smith broke, and he was not deterred, right? He could feel that you guys were still in it. And I like to think about the guy in the dugout who is firing up the guys, even though you're down by 10 runs and it's not over, because it's not over. That's the kind of attitude that you've got to have on a championship team. And he was that guy. And when he was so fired up, it was almost as if, hey, this is not over yet. The cosmic forces, you never know what they're going to serve you up. And of course, in the end, you became the champion. Now, you said it in the media center and you said it in your championship celebration, but tell the WFO radio audience about the moment where you realized you were the champ, because it's cool. You gave a version, and then Declan gave the real version to the folks in the media center, right? Like that you were listening. You were back at the trailer. You weren't even on the starting line. You didn't want that... I hate to say it, the Doug Coletta, the run kind of moment out there. You were hiding out a little bit, but take us through that.
Yeah, that's exactly how it was. I didn't want that Doug Coletta moment. I mean, I was back when the run happened years and years ago. I was standing on the starting line. My heart just felt for Doug Coletta. I mean, the look he had on his face. And my situation wasn't going to be like that. Jerry just had to make a run to the finish line, and he was going to get it. But Doug's deal back with Tony Schumacher and the run, that was something that I'll never forget. But I didn't want to be, unfortunately, I didn't want to be that guy down there at the end of the track feeling that pain. I just wanted to be hanging out with my crew at the trailer and kind of experiencing our last day at the races in 2019. And that's where we were. So ultimately, Angel actually said she was the most positive all day long. But before the final, she's like, he's got this. There's something that's going to happen. So she went and set up her phone over on our hospitality table, shooting back at our trailer of us just all milling around. And then you hear Reinhardt giving the play-by-play in the background, like, there's issues with Jerry's bike. It died in the burnout. And then, different things happen, and he's staging it. And, here I am just trying to keep everybody calm because they're trying to go nuts thinking it's over. And I'm thinking the worst-case scenario, like, okay, his bike's not idling, but it's probably just a stupid TPS sensor. And then when he decks the throttle, it's going to pop. He'll pop the clutch and take off and go 684 to 198 miles an hour and, go elite low ET of eliminations in the final round and lock up his championship. But, I was ready for total defeat. And even when Reinhardt said that Gianna was going down the track and all she has to do is make a run, I was like, okay, I'm not getting overly excited here. I want to hear somebody say that I had locked up the championship. And, my reaction was pretty slow at that point, because I was just in disbelief that the day, as many days that have not gone for me on Championship Sunday in Pomona, this one finally did go my way with total outcome. It was a heartbreaking day to start the day, but at the end of the day, I've been in that situation twice before where I've had issues in Pomona, and whether it be bike problems or another red light, 2007, 2010, I had almost the exact same scenarios, and both of those went not my direction. So it's just, I was ready to relive that for the third time, and this time the racing gods were on my side.
And you're lucky you weren't watching it because, and I spoke with Brian Lones about this, about the call of the final, which was, you know, as soon as she launched, he pretty much, you know, said Gianna's going to win and you're going to be the champ. And it was a hairy run for Gianna. I'm sure that you have seen it since. And, you know, he said, man, I was all in on the call and the call turned out to be great. But it was a hairy run. Like, she could have hit the wall. It was she was kind of going towards the wall and she like muscled it down there. So if you were watching, I'm sure it would have been a little bit of a heart attack moment for you. But in the
end, it would have been for sure. Yeah.
Right. You've seen it now after the fact, I'm sure.
Yes, I have. Yeah.
But in the end, right, I looked into Jerry's eyes and he felt the disappointment and like, man, so close. We could have been a 2-time champ. You're a 6-time champ. I said it. It was a great honor for me to introduce you as a champion. That's something new I got to do this year. It was a lot of fun. And so doing some of the research, you're the winningest driver in Pro Stock Motorcycle. But this season accounted for like 14% of your total career wins. You had said early on that this was your best career year. You had recommitted, you know, diet, exercise, all of those things, and it all came together in what has been one of the most dominant seasons we have seen.
Yeah, it was an absolute complete change over 2018, that's for sure, when I didn't get to celebrate in the final, in the winner's circle. You know, I got the, five final rounds 2018, and this year we just completely turned the tables on that. I mean, the motorcycle that we had this year, built that new Harley Davidson chassis here at Vance and Hines, and it just worked really, really great. I did an interview the other day, and I said I don't think I've made as many good runs as in my career, complete, like my entire career, as I did this year. I mean, the bike just rode that good. It was just so easy to ride. When I didn't make mistakes and leave the rear axle loose or the adjusters loose, that was a nightmare in Dallas and all in itself. But it just, the motorcycle was absolutely phenomenal to ride this year. And our guys did a great job like they always do. We only had that one snafu in Vegas, like we were talking about with the electrical wire shorting out after the burnout, but that was just a new bike growing pain. It was just, you know, different wires in different places. And none of us thought to look in that specific spot and it had worn through and arced out the battery. So, it's a, what could have been situation, but you know, there's nothing to hang our head on about at all this season. We absolutely just, we were there when we needed to be with tuning the motorcycle, and I know luck was on our side when we really needed it, when we didn't have the best bike, and my bike maybe had been off a couple hundredths to Matt or Jerry or Hector Jr. or something like that, but then they would slow down with that round when they had to run us, and we would run the same, and it would work out all on our side for so many different times, and I thought for sure on Sunday that our luck was finally crashing on the beach, and we were going to be you know, without any water and sitting on the beach, you know, high-sided. So it just happened to work out that we had a great season all season long. It was my career year, and I can't think of any other ways to put it than it was just, you know, an exceptional way to have this season go off. It was absolutely phenomenal. We had good fun in the pit area. Having Angel come on the team this year, it spiced up the pit area a little bit. When, you know, you have one of your former longtime rivals as your teammate now, you get to talk about the old times and you know, what we were thinking when we were racing each other with having our helmets on and such. But, you know, on the backside of it, we were always friendly with each other. Our kids would play together in the pit areas and things like that. We'd talk after hours and things, but we were fierce rivals. But it brought a cool new level of fun to our pit area, having her in the team with her family and everything. So this year is just it's one I will never forget. I mean, there's been many years in my career that I could say that about, but this one by far stands out the most. And I got a great group of crew guys that have been with me for so long. Mike Mullaney for the last 5 years, Scott Skierman for the last 14 years, Ray Veers driving our truck and working on Eddie's bike for the last 13 years. And I got Jay Krawick, Eddie's little brother, on the team as Angel's wrench. And it's been really, really fun. It's been absolutely a blast.
Yeah, and Angel is back. She gets bragging rights over the winter break over Eddie with that big first-round matchup. That was so much fun. Like, this Auto Club Finals, I know every year, you just mentioned it, right? Every year that goes by is, like, better than the last year, it seems. And so many people will be like, you know, well, 4 years ago it was more exciting. That's really hard to do. We all live in the here and now. But in this particular occurrence, I really believe the here and now is the best that we've seen. There were just so many storylines, whether it be what was going on in Top Fuel, Funny Car, and Pro Stock, which all had their interesting stories independent of what you guys had. but we had Eddie and Angel first round. That was fun. We had the Hectors first round. That was fun. Just so many different things. Obviously, you with the championship, Matt Smith putting bounties on you. Just like a lot of cool different layers of things going on out there. But what I took out of it, you know, Angel being back, I think that is going to be really good. You know, you were kind enough to give me some insight early in the year to the things that she was fighting. And I drew the analogy to a player that joins the New York Yankees, right? And they want to do so good and they push so hard and they get out of what they had done to get there. And she heard me say that and was like, that's exactly what I'm going through. And
yeah, it's like the curse of the pinstripes, right?
It is. And some people can't,
you know what they call it?
Some people can't deal with it. Being in the white hot spotlight of being on a team like that. And there are other teams in the world that have that experience. I would imagine that's what you guys are for Pro Stock Motorcycle. Oh my gosh, Harley Davidson, like Harley Davidson fans, Vance and Hines, I am there. All of a sudden, I want to be so good. It would have been almost unfair to not give her a chance now that she has obviously, in my opinion, acclimated.
Yeah, you know, you hit the nail right on the head with the analogy with the baseball deal, because she said in preseason testing, when she came, actually it wasn't preseason testing because the bike wasn't painted yet, or was it? I don't know, I can't remember. At one point she said she would close her eyes and she felt really comfortable on the bike and everything was right where she wanted it, and she would open her eyes and see the orange and black and the Harley Davidson on the gas tank, and her heart would just start beating out of her chest, and that's probably pretty accurate. You know, we're representing a $1 billion company with Harley Davidson, and we got to make sure we put on our game face the right way and promote Harley Davidson the best we can, the way we can, by going out there and racing and winning races. So it's been really cool. And to see her progress as far as she did, she didn't understand, I think, how intense our bikes are for riding, for aerodynamics, for the way our power band is. And she got an eye-opening experience with how everything works with our team. And she got adapted to it, you know, probably about, I'd say Denver Sonoma was probably a big turning point for her. And then Indy, she goes on to qualify number one in the biggest race of the year, and let her borrow my engine. And the thing with that was, it wasn't anything to do with parts or power or something like that. It was giving her the mindset like, hey, this is the stuff I just won all these races with. It's the exact same as yours, but let's just throw engine number 131 in your bike, even though it's the same as 123 that came out. And here's your chance. You know, it gave her the mental confidence, like, yes, I do have the stuff. And then we go to Reading. She takes all her parts back, goes number one with all her parts. So that was really cool to see how that transpired and give her more confidence and get more round wins. And the thing I'm most pumped about is we got her in the top 10 after really having to relearn how to ride. I mean, we were working on her riding position a few times throughout the year, trying to get her better and better, and where she was more comfortable on the bike and leaving with it. And it paid big dividends for her on consistency down the pike. And it's cool to have her back on board next year. We're excited about going testing again. And the thing I'm most excited about is how mad my dad is. My gosh, the guy's like, he's in there grinding on ports right now as we speak, trying to find the next couple horsepower for our team for next year. And he's got this rejuvenated fire underneath him that he wants to make sure we go out there and we have top speed again. That's the one thing we've been lacking.
Well, right. At the end of the year, you guys were getting outran, which brings me to, just to put a period on the Angel story before I get into this, is that it's a process, right? Like there's not going to be too many things that you do at a high level that you just jump on it and are immediately great and as good as the people who have been doing it for many, many years. There's got to be a process. And I think that's a learning example for everybody out there. Like, it's going to be a challenge. And Angel, we know she's one of the best for many, many years. And she just went through this extreme challenge. And look, she's coming out on the other side, you know, better, stronger. And I fully expect her to win a race or two or more next year now that she's up to speed. But you can't expect to just have instant results. That's just out of the realm of, you know, normal life.
Yeah, it's just the way it goes. I mean, you saw the same thing with Karen Stouffer this year. She got on a motorcycle that was Ellie Tonglet's the last couple of years over at the War Team. And, you know, they were probably expecting instant results, but she had to really learn how to ride what that setup needed. And it took her, you know, most of the season to get really comfortable, and she came on strong in the countdown. So we had the same deal going on with, I call her our girl on the team. the two girls out there battling. They were, you know, slow to start, but they got picked up and they were moving along and knocking down round wins throughout the end of the season. So it was nice to see that progression and give us motivation for next season.
So let's talk a little bit about the Suzukis. You know, this another thing that happened this season was obviously, you know, Steve Johnson and Matt Smith, the whole hobby racer thing, which was neat because it brought some attention to Pro Stock Motorcycle, right? You got to have something like that every once in a while to make the casual fans go, what are these guys fighting about? What is this story? And it had to do with the Suzukis and the V-Twins and all of this stuff. And the bottom line is that the last couple races of the year, I don't know, I feel like the Suzukis, did they have a performance advantage? I don't know. Were they as quick and as fast as you guys? Definitely.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to be said with that. You know, they definitely came on at the right time, and there's a definite correlation on what we see between when the Suzuki's picked up, and I think quite a few V-twins fell off. So it goes right back to Sonoma. Could be the fuel that we're getting. It could be something like that. But, I mean, nothing changed in the horsepower department of the Suzuki's, and nothing changed the horsepower department of our bikes that I know of. So we slowed up a little bit. Suzuki's sped up, and it kind of brought us right back to level playing field. And at that point, it was just about who can make the better quality runs and go straighter and put the whole package together. You can't give up, you know, hundreds, let alone thousands of 60 foot now to anybody out there. You got to have the whole package to get down the racetrack. And they definitely had a resurgence, and it was giving me a gut ache. I thought, here we go, we had a great season, now these guys are going to go dominate the entire countdown. And it looked like it. Then the war team was trying to go for four in a row in the countdown, and it was just it was mind-boggling how fast it flipped. And we're just able to keep moving along and persevere and find the little things that, you know, could make us a little bit quicker. It wasn't just resting back here at the shop. I mean, we hadn't rear-wheel dynoed the bikes in a couple of years just because it's wear and tear on the chassis and whatnot. And we usually do engine dyno work, but we decided, hey, we need to try something and work on the insides of the airbox and work on, fuel injection stuff on the rear-wheel dyno. And it was after St. Louis and after Charlotte and after Dallas, like, we were always back here on the rear-wheel dyno trying to find anything that could give us, like, another hundredth all the way down the racetrack. We weren't looking for, you know, a hundredth in this particular spot, just maybe a hundredth total. Just, you don't want to lose those races by 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 thousandths of a second and know that, hey, if we didn't put in the effort at the shop, those guys were going to be able to come around us there that last little bit. And that might have paid the biggest dividends, because we had a couple of those tight races that could have been, you know, whether you win or lose them on the starting line, you don't want to leave that few thousands out there on the racetrack in the last back half. So we got that fixed up a little bit, and it worked out for us the rest of the way.
Amazing. Amazing that you're racing for hundreds and thousands of a second and you got to fight for them. What can you tell us about the 2020 Pro Stock Motorcycle situation? I mean, I know you are working on your program always, but it is my understanding, but I haven't heard anything official necessarily about maybe some rules changes or allowing some things that weren't allowed in the past in terms of number of valves, etc. I know there were some things bantered about. Certainly, if they're not official and you can't talk about them, don't talk about them. But if they are going to happen and I'm just not aware of it, please tell us, that kind of deal. What can we expect out of 2020 Pro Stock Motorcycle building upon this great season we just had?
Well, obviously, we're not going to rest on anything on our stuff. Like I said, my dad's still back there and with his grinder and trying to find the next way to make us faster for our Harleys. But on the Vance and Hines side of it, we do supply Suzuki engines to customers out there. Obviously, the war team and quite a few others, the Underdolls and everything else like that. So was it mid-season? I think NHRA started talking about potential for a Suzuki four-valve cylinder head, which hasn't been around for, heck, I don't know how long. I don't even think my brother raced with a four valve in his professional days going back to the 90s. So I think he might have tested with one in the early 90s, but those kind of went by the wayside a long, long time ago, and everybody's been running two valves. And NHRA has allowed Suzuki the four valve option for next year. So you have to have an approved cylinder head. There's certain deadlines and things that need to be met in place. And at Vance Hines, we are working on one for our customers, and that's my side project. So, you know, I do CAD engineering for our shop here at Vance and Hines, and it's just a matter of picking away and making the CAD file look exactly like I want it to, and get everything in the works and get one out there for our customers for 2020. We're not sure when it's going to hit the track. We have deadlines set in place by NHRA that are there, so we know certain criteria we have to meet along the way, and that's where we stand on that. So it's a long process. There's a lot of, it's not just one piece, you know, there's lots of multiple parts in the cylinder head that need to get procured and made and sourced, and it's a nonstop nightmare here in the last month or so trying to get this going, but got to do something to keep our customers happy as well as keep our race team happy. So if we make them faster, then we get to work harder and go faster. And the ultimate goal is I want to see 200 mile per hour runs up on the scoreboard in pro stock motorcycle all the time, not just, you know, a couple people doing it here and there randomly. We need to see motorcycles going 200 because that'll get the fans way more involved.
I totally agree. And I'm glad, first of all, thank you for giving us the detail on that. And I can imagine that you guys have a great challenge and, you know, you can't have one or two of these things. You're going to have, there's going to be demand and people are going to want them and you're going to want to sell them. And, you know, everybody with a Suzuki is probably going to want to dive in on this as immediately as possible. But I agree. If the record could be, I'm just fantasizing right now, you know, if the record could be like 204 and we see like 200 on a regular basis and, you know, young drivers or people that are relatively new in the sport could be shooting and have a realistic chance to go 200 on a motorcycle, I think that would be really good for the excitement of the category.
Yeah, yeah, it'd be nice to have those runs where it's like, oh, they didn't go 200 that time, you know, it's like, you know, see the class, you know, evolve to the point where we're running 670s at a lot of these racetracks going 200. I think, you know, our bikes are more than capable enough stopping in all the tracks we have there for that distance. It's not a problem on that aspect. And it's just the next evolution of the class. You know, it's just, it's time for them to get something. You know, for years, it's been weight moving around on the V-twins and Suzuki's been kind of stagnant on weight and the cylinder head design and things like that. And they're pretty much maxed out. They've just been getting you know, it's just been CC changes and, you know, going back a decade ago. So now it's just time to evolve into the future that was 15 years ago is just finally coming back around for Pro Stock Motorcycle and Suzuki World.
Which is great. Which is great. And, you know, I think about like MotoGP and all the other forms of like Grand Prix style motorcycle racing. Not that I'm the most knowledgeable. You guys, you and Mike Mullaney were showing me some, you know, I don't know whether what the sanction is, but there are a lot of really quick and fast motorcycles out there in the non-NHRA Pro Stock world with power adders and all kinds of craziness. I do think we need to turn up the wick a little bit on these bikes.
Yeah, you know, these things are they're so refined, and you know, you're making 360 horsepower out of these four cylinders, 370 horsepower, and you know, you're running 670s at nearly 200 miles per hour on some of these bikes. And you know, the ones that we're talking, like you were mentioning, the power adder bikes that are over there in the no wheelie bar world, they're running, you know, 630s at 230 and absolute lunacy on those part. But you know, our class is all about finesse. It's not about, you know, taking big swings and having people, you know, slow up a tenth or two from run to run because it wheelied or something. This is decided by thousands at every increment all the way down the racetrack. So it's a finesse and rider sport. You know, it's easy to go fast in pro stock motorcycle. It's hard to go really fast. That's what we talk about. Eddie and I talk about all the time, especially with Angel this year. It's like, yes, you're doing a good job getting the bike down the track, and you can see that you ran a competitive time, but there's 200 to 300s left in it if it's ridden the correct way. So, you know, that little bit of time, you know, in the bracket racing world, right, 200 or 300s is huge. If you had that, you're loving life. So heads up stuff the same way. It's just, you got to make those, you know, quote unquote, picture perfect runs that none of us have ever made, but you try to do that every single time.
Interesting. Now, listen, I could talk all day. I know you're busy. What about the winter break? Okay, where this is the last time we're going to speak, more than likely, before the holidays, Thanksgiving in the rearview mirror, Christmas, New Year's coming up. I know you guys are working, but you've got to be trying to make some time to do some stuff at home with the fam. What do you guys got planned?
Oh, man, my wife, she had a big birthday here last year, and for that specific birthday, she wanted to decide to really run us ragged. So she signed us up for the Disney Marathon weekend. It's called the Dopey Challenge. We've been big into running here the last 5-6 years and doing half marathons around Indianapolis and Disney World and Disneyland and all this stuff. So this Disney Marathon weekend is it's in early January. It's like the 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, something like that, that whatever that weekend is in January. And we're going to do a 5K on Thursday, a 10K on Friday, a half marathon on Saturday, and a full marathon on Sunday. So this is kind of her bucket list thing she wants to do. So we've been prepping for that and running I don't know how many miles here in the last couple months on treadmills and outside in the rain and working out at Orange Theory Fitness and just trying to, you know, get my whole body in shape. And that's the extent of my vacation, is go torture myself.
You just made us all feel like losers. No, really.
I'm
like,
sorry.
What are you going to do for the holidays?
I hope I don't feel like a loser come Sunday.
Okay, but like, I don't know about this stuff. I know there are people that run. I know that you like to run. I get it, running. I tried running. I wish I could run. I just, the slamming my skeleton into the ground over and over again hasn't worked out for me. But did you say you're going to run four straight days, 5-10, half marathon, and full marathon all in a row? Do people do that? Is that possible?
Yeah, that's why it's called the Dopey Challenge. We're all dopes for it. But no, it's something that she wanted to do for her birthday and cross us off our list. And then we can go back to just doing the single races here and there instead of a grueling 4 days. So it'll be fun. It's just going to be, you know, the first couple of days will be easy. You know, 3 miles and 6 miles, that's nothing. But, you know, even the half won't be too bad. But doing the full after doing all that stuff is going to be torture. So.
Tanya, what are you doing? What is this?
Yeah, we're not trying to set records by any means or even personal bests. We're just going out there to have fun. My cousin's husband's going to come with us. My cousin and her husband are big supporters of me and live in Vegas and come to Pomona, Vegas every year. They're like our vacation team. We always go vacationing together, and this time we're going to go torture ourselves instead of going on a cruise.
So you're going to this? You're going to what, Disney World in Orlando?
Yeah, Disney World Orlando. That's yeah, January 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th.
Do you even get to hit the parks? Like, do you get to have fun on this trip at all, or do you get to eat? Like,
We'll have a little bit, and then we always do the Epcot around the world stuff, so we'll go have some good food and things like that. But this is going to be more of a business trip, I guess, per se, instead of a fun trip. So.
Right. I was going to say, you got to do Galaxy's Edge. Yeah. They just opened a new ride down there, the Star Wars thing. Okay, one more question about the running now, just because, like, all right. What do you think about? Like, you're running, okay? Like, you know, some would say running is boring, and like, okay, now you're in a groove, right? You're grooving. You're running, and you know you've got a long way to go, and you're running, and she's running, and you're running, and there's people running around you, and you're running, and now your body is kind of, in my mind, would hopefully be on run mode, autopilot. So what's going on inside your head? What are you thinking about?
Well, that's absolutely what happens is autopilot. Like, yeah, my struggle mileage, like, but when I get going, doesn't matter if I'm going 5 miles or 15 miles, my struggle is from 1.5 to 2.5. Like that mile, just, it kills me. That's just when you're starting to feel it and it just starts hurting, and then just try to push through it. And I really, honestly, I think it's probably when I do more of my racing thinking than anything else. And like this cylinder head that I've been designing, like I just envision SolidWorks world in my foreground, and that's what I'm thinking about. You know, luckily I don't run off curbs and things like that, but after that mile 2.5, you know, it is kind of like autopilot. And especially after like mile 5, your legs are just kind of numb and you're just kind of moving along with what your brain knows how to do and forget about the pain, and everything kind of, you know, goes numb. You stop feeling your feet and it's really not too bad. So as long as I can get past mile 8 where my knee starts hurting, it's usually not a problem there either. But it's just like drag racing. I put my helmet on and, you know, I get calm and, you know, everything kind of slows down. That's how I am when I run too. It just kind of, everything fades away and just keep moving.
Wow. Very interesting. Thank you for that. You know, I had a recent experience this year with running. I've never been able to run. And one day I tried, you know, let me run. And I actually was able to run farther than I had ever run in my life. And I had my second wind and my third wind and I was going. And then I got to this point where like I was amazed. Oh, my gosh, I can't believe I'm running farther than I've ever run in my entire life. And then I started to think, maybe I shouldn't run this far. Maybe I'm going to have a heart attack, Andrew. Like, maybe my heart's ready to explode. I don't know. I've never run this far. Maybe I should slow down. So I ran a little bit further, and then I started to walk. And the next day, I went and got the car, and I was like, I got to see how far I ran, man. I had to be really far. And I
you retraced your steps.
I retraced my steps. I had run 1 mile.
Oh, boy.
1 mile. And so I can't, it's just one of my things that I can't, I'm not there on it. I can't do it. But whatever.
Not for everybody, but it's,
1 mile.
It works for me, and it's fun. It's just, it's one of those mind-numbing things. You just keep going and going and going, and it just works.
There you go. Well, hey, all year long, you're always, you know, gracious with your time to come on and kind of explain some of the finer points of what's going on behind your victories, different storylines, et cetera. I encourage all the listeners, maybe we've got new listeners checking in on this championship conversation. You can go back into our archive and hear all of them from right at the start of the year at the 50th Amalie Motor Oil Gator Nationals. We learn a lot. That's why I'm able to recount you know, follow the stories out there as well as I do, because of information you give me on the show and that stuff. And I really appreciate it. Congratulations. Great year. Great season. I'm looking forward to next year already. Enjoy your, you know, dopey weekend. I hope you make it through. I have no doubt. But thank you for always making the time for us. And congratulations on your 6th world championship. Puts you in absolutely rare air among NHRA's absolute elite. 6 or more is just so rare. Congratulations, Andrew.
Thank you, Joe. And, you know, when we get done with this dopey challenge, I'll check in with you and let you know I'm still kicking and let you know how the weekend went.
Yeah, well, right now, like, honestly, my brain tells me there's a 50-50 chance of survival because there's no way that that could happen. Come on. 4 days in a row ending with the marathon?
Yeah.
Do the marathon the first day. Nope. We're going to save it for last.
Yeah, they want to save it for last. That's why you just work your way up to it. But we'll be with thousands of people and friends and family. It'll be a good time.
Yes. No, I know. You guys will have fun. All right, Andrew, congratulations. Happy holidays to you and the fam. Please say hello to everybody over at Vance and Hines, all the guys, you know, Eddie, Angel, Mike, Scott, everybody. Please say hello and happy holidays. And thanks for all always supporting WFO.
Yep. Thanks, guys. Thanks, WFO. And all the WFO fans, happy holidays to you as well.
Thanks, Andrew. Andrew Hines with us here on WFO Radio. The four-valve per-cylinder Suzuki sound interesting, and I love what he has to say about 200-mile-per-hour pro-stock motorcycles, and I couldn't agree more. Things need to evolve. Stagnation equals death. That is what we have seen in our relatively short lives, meaning, you know, drag racing, motorsports, even us as people. If you continue to do the same thing, I like to live by cliches, right? Like what if there's a cliche for it? It's probably true. Whatever you wanted to think about over the top end. And if it's not exactly true, enough people think it's true for there to be a cliche. Right. And if you are doing the same thing, you're going to get the same results. There's one. Right. If you do not move forward, you die. There's all kinds of them out there. And I really think that a class like Pro Stock Motorcycle needs to evolve. And 4 valves per cylinder on the Suzuki sounds interesting to me. I would love to see the bikes go quicker and faster. Doesn't have to be a lot, but it can be a little. And they have been in place for a little too long. Things cannot stagnate. That is the point. And it looks like Pro Stock Motorcycle is going to continue to evolve. That is great. Thanks to Andrew for coming on the show. Bummer that he had to experience that kind of heartbreak or anxiety over the final day of the season as opposed to a championship coronation. But those racing gods, man, they have a sense of humor, and they're not just going to give it to you. Thanks to Andrew for coming on the show. The winningest Pro Stock Motorcycle racer in history, now 6 championships, ties Dave Schultz. Just amazing. There are more champions in the WFO archive. You're going to hear from Megan Meyer. You're going to hear from Allison Dahl, Steve Torrance, Robert Height. They're all in there. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Hopefully write us a review. Stay tuned. More coming. WFO.
WFO! The views and opinions of the hosts, guests, or callers do not necessarily reflect that of the station ownership, advertisers, or agencies.
I love WFO Radio.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, engine builders, Total Seal Piston Rings are the leader in ring seal technology, and they go out of their way to help their customers and will make custom sets for any specific piston you might have. Customer service, top notch, made in America, Absolutely. They're located in Phoenix, Arizona, and they've got everything it takes to develop the world's best piston rings. Give them a call at 800-874-2753 or go to TotalSeal.com.
Hey, this is Scott Palmer, driver of the NHRA Cat Spot Litter Top Fuel Dragster. Do you have a cat? Go to CatSpotLitter.com, order it today. All natural product, made out of coconuts, 100% biodegradable. All you NHRA fan, cat owners, support our team. Go to CatSpotLitter.com.
Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School. Whether you're a bracket racer who wants to get better or a thrill seeker looking to cross it off your bucket list, Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School can put you on the right track. Don't believe me? Tell him, Frank.
No matter how little or how much experience you have, we've got a program for you. So if driving a dragster is on your bucket list, there's no better time than now. And if you'd like to be a pro, well, here's funny car chap, Jack Beckman.
Hey, this is Jack Beckman. Long before I was Fast Jack, I was a bracket racer who went to the Frank Hawley School. The time I spent there was some of the most exciting, intense, and fulfilling moments ever in a race car. I feel the curriculum Frank developed greatly helped me win not only the Super Comp, but also the NHRA Nitro Funny Car Championship. Frank put me on the right track. What are you waiting for?
Call them at 866-480-7223. That's 866-480-7223. Or visit frankhawley.com.
This is Jeff Rice, a.k.a. Diepenhock. I just want to let you know that NHRA Nitro is probably the best coverage of NHRA drag racing, period. How can you not like a 3.5-hour broadcast with all the winners specifically for drag racing? WFO rules the airwaves.
This is WFO Radio.